Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this pre-recorded program, Very Mod. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, January 13, 2022. The United States, the United Kingdom and Norway are calling on the South Sudan government to share information on revenue collections.
Let me also say that our concerns stem from our interest in helping ensure peace, and because we have seen tangible benefits to the South Sudanese people from the reforms today.
And some South Sudanese economists say the government should have a budget for running the country.
I think we could still pass it. Even if you remain 1 week, we can still pass it, because the money which is allotted there might have been spent the way it is. And then it will be a job of Auditor General to audit the whole specialized in expanding agencies.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States, the United Kingdom and Norway, known as the Troika, are urging the South Sudan government to share data on the country's oil and non-oil revenue with the public. The Troika says being transparent ensures accountability in line with the ongoing public financial management reforms and makes sure every citizen benefits from the resources of the country. Winnie Chirino reports for VOA from Juba.
Steve Kapperson, the Norwegian ambassador to South Sudan, says the Troika issued a statement on the matter since South Sudan's economy is very fragile.
We are at a critical time for the economic reform process, and as South Sudan is preparing to exit an IMF staff monitor program and hopes soon to access a new loan. Therefore, the constant change of senior personnel risks disrupting further progress in South Sudan. So the Troika therefore underscores in this statement that a faster pace is now needed in the implementation of public financial management reform. Let me also say that our concerns stem from our interest in helping ensure peace, and because we have seen tangible benefits to the South Sudanese people from the reforms today.
Kapperson, who is also a co-chair of the Oversight Committee on Public Financial Management, says the Troika is closely monitoring the progress of the financial management reforms. She says so far the Troika has seen improvement.
We have seen important progress, particularly on monetary policy and exchange rate reform. And strengthening of the South Sudanese pound has been a major achievement. And this has shielded South Sudanese from rising global food prices, but many of the reforms are long-term and need momentum to progress. So therefore, we stress the need for further strengthening efforts and even, again, increase the pace in economic reform.
Kapperson says South Sudan is known for its vast natural resources and that everyone is asking where the money goes. She says the South Sudan government needs to be transparent so that people can know how much revenue is collected and how much is being used and for what purpose.
The government's revenues and expenditures should concern everyone in South Sudan. It's their money that is being spent, and they have all right to know the exact revenues and should benefit from the investments and services provided. Transparency of public spending is therefore crucial, because it allows the people to know what resources are available in the country and debate what they think should be prioritized. And the information allows the people to hold their government to account.
Kapperson cautions the government not to expect donor funds to increase in the future. She encourages the government to step up and ensure it's able to raise revenue on its own so that the oil and non-oil revenues can be used to deliver basic services to the South Sudanese people.
South Sudan has great potential to become more prosperous, and to do so it must use its resources to invest in its own future. I also think that we will see more investors investing in South Sudan. That is also very important for the people. And we need to make sure that revenues from taxes and oil is spent on salaries, infrastructure and basic services.
Kapasan says South Sudan's debt is very high and that the government should work to reduce it so that the International Monetary Fund can continue lending the country money. She says lower debt will also spare the ordinary citizens from the burden of repaying it in the future. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
The South Sudan government plans to present fiscal year budget in parliament next week after operating for nearly 2 years without a functioning budget. An economics lecturer at the University of Juba says it's important for the government to run the country on a functional budget, adding that lawmakers should also ensure the budget covers investments and research. David Monodanga reports for VOA from Juba.
It's been more than 2 years since Parliament passed a budget for the government's operations. The last one passed was the 2019-2020 budget. In May last year, President Salva Kiir dissolved Parliament to pave the way for the appointment of MPs from the parties that signed the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. That happened to be the same month the Transitional National Legislative Assembly was supposed to present the budget for the 2021-2022 fiscal year. It's been more than 7 months since then, but John Aganyi, head of the Information Committee at the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says it's not too late to debate and pass the budget.
I think we could still pass it. Even if it remains 1 week, we can still pass it because the money which is allotted there might have been spent the way it is. And then it will be a job of Auditor General to audit the whole specialized in expanding agencies. And they will give us the result of that kind of overlapping time in history. So definitely we are not anchoring any budget process. It will take shape and we will go ahead.
Aganyi says the president's dissolution of parliament and the delay in forming the specialized committees in parliament slowed efforts to put the budget on the table for discussion for about 8 months. He says it took more than 3 months for parties in the unity government to submit their nominees to parliament's various specialized committees to take a full shape.
It was a long, long, long process. It is after 3 months that it has to take shape. The members were sworn in August, in the 10th of August. And from there, again, we have to begin another process. We need also to appoint the deputy chairs and chairs and deputy chairs of the specialized committee because, you know, when the budget is actually tabled, it is actually transferred to specific committees which will actually deal according to the expanding agencies or ministries. So when the budget is tabled, it is referred to the specialized committees. And this is what actually hampered the process because the specialized committee were not on place.
Raja Gladys, an economics lecturer at the University of Juba, says it's important that the lawmakers expedite the budget.
As economists, we believe that the country or even at the personal level, you need to have a budget. And budget is very important because it guides you to focus on what you want to achieve in this particular year and what do you plan for in the next year. So this budget, the national budget, I think they were only focusing on the operational expenses. But we could think about investment, you know.
Gladys says she's looking forward to seeing the lawmakers focus more on investment projects and a budget for research inventory and data. She says the lawmakers and other stakeholders responsible for formulating the budget should stick to the budget principles and policies.
It's a very good practice that South Sudan should really practice the good principle of budgeting and follow it. Like, for instance, the drafting of the budget, they should also follow the timeline and the deadline, you know. So we should not run the country without budget. So it's really, really important for the policymakers to focus on their responsibilities, you know, the national responsibilities and the national duties.
When President Kiir opened Parliament last August, he acknowledged that the government must not operate without an approved budget and tasked the lawmakers to expedite work on the budget for the 2021-2022 fiscal year. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Authorities in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state are calling for urgent humanitarian aid for people displaced following recent clashes between armed raiders suspected of being Masiriya tribesmen and residents of Awil East County. The Awil East County Commissioner says hundreds of families were displaced. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Officials in Awil East County say last week horse-riding Masiriya tribesmen, believed to be from the Sudanese border town of Mairev, attacked and killed 15 people and injured scores of others in the Pabol area. Kiri Yor Lual, the Awil East County Commissioner, says more than 847 families who were displaced from 11 villages, including Paboth, Wakagor, Tomtew and Aramyang areas, are in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
They need food, they need water, they need medicine, they need shelter. Because, as they ran away, they hardly pick anything. They get none of the families that was displaced have anything now to eat. And where they are camping is also over crowding the already existing facilities in terms of access, like water. And there is an overwhelming need of supplies for these IDPs. So this is one of the big challenges we are currently facing.
Lual appeals to non-governmental organizations and well-wishers to support the displaced persons.
We are coordinating some support from the well-wishers, the goodwill of the people who are contributing generously to support them. I was at the site on Tuesday, and we dispatched some food aid from well-wishers, local people of the areas affected. They contributed some food, and we took it to them.
Commissioner Lual says the internally displaced families are camping at Werniel and Warchum, where they can barely be reached by phone as there is no mobile network coverage in the area. Susan John Madud, the chairwoman of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state, says thousands of internally displaced persons, mostly women, children and the elderly, are camping on open ground in harsh weather conditions in Awil East. Madud says her office is working with the state government to encourage humanitarian organizations in the state to support the IDPs.
The state RRC, in collaboration with the state government, we are calling all the humanitarian partners operating in northern Bahr al-Ghazal to join hand in hand and supporting the victims in Yintabul. Yes, tomorrow, all the NGOs working in northern Bahr al-Ghazal, we are going with the commissioner to Yintabul to assess them and look how to support the victims.
Madud says the state authorities have provided the IDPs with some sacks of food items, but she says there are not enough supplies for everyone. She is calling on humanitarian agencies to provide food, shelter and medicines. Yesterday, the authorities in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state said they had closed the western border with the Sudan indefinitely after an attack by suspected Masiriya tribesmen that left more than a dozen people dead in Awil East County. The state minister for information, William Anyuan, said the situation was tense and civilians were living in fear. Anyuan said a delegation led by President Salva Kiir's national security advisor, Tuut Galwaak, who is currently in Khartoum, will discuss the incident in Awil East with the Sudan government. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Activists in Sudan prepare for mass protests across the country. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite meal?
I like chips and anything dry, whether chicken or beef.
My favorite meal is our fish, mainly jambo, and local vegetables like inkwani.
I love chapati. Like, I don't know why I love chapati, but I just love chapati. There's no reason for loving it. Like, chapati every day.
My favorite meal is jollof and rice with chicken. That will be best for me.
My favorite food, matoke, that is banana and beans. man and penis, yes.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Sudanese Resistance Committee, the main force behind Sudan's revolution, has called for another mass protest in Khartoum Thursday. After having called off the protest planned for yesterday, the committee's head of media and information in Khartoum says the group intends to use different forms of civil disobedience to pressure the military leaders to resign, and that street protest will continue until then. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Most public and private institutions in Khartoum have been closed since yesterday after the resistance committee called for a protest against the government on Wednesday. The committee called off the protest around mid-morning yesterday and rescheduled it for today. Bridges linking Khartoum, Omdurman and Khartoum North are blocked, and there has been a heavy security deployment around the streets and main government installations. Sahar Al-Jizuli is the head of media and information for the Khartoum State Resistance Committee. Is speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, she says the group intends to surprise the security forces on the streets and paralyze government institutions for 2 days as a new form of the civil disobedience against the military leaders. Al-Jizuli says the group will keep on surprising the security forces with different schedules for their protests until the military leaders hand over power to a civilian government.
We initially announced our protest on the 12th, but we called it off and pushed it for today. With this, we have kept all the institutions closed for 2 days as a new form of civil disobedience. Since yesterday, bridges were blocked and people were not allowed to cross and access the town.
The military took power on October 25th and arrested many of the civilian members of the transitional government. The Sudanese military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, has said he acted because conflicts within the transitional government could lead to violence. Al-Jizuli said the resistance committees across the country are not being incited by any Sudanese political parties.
The main objective of all the protests, marches, civil disobedience, and all form of rejections are meant as peaceful pressure to demand the military leaders to leave the political scene for civilian politicians. We don't recognize them as the legitimate rulers of such a crucial transitional period.
Since the coup, there have been repeated protests by pro-democracy groups across the country. The Sudanese Doctors Association says nearly 60 lives have been lost and more than 500 people wounded since then. Al-Jizuli says as long as the military leaders occupy civilian seats in the presidential palace, the Sudanese people will continue to go to the streets and make their voices heard.
All of our planned and unplanned protests will be heading to the presidential palace. We want to draw the attention of those who are claiming to be our government and have occupied the place that we don't want them. This is the message we want to tell them, that we cannot be ruled again by the military coup leaders. As long as they still occupy the palace, we will continue to go there.
On Saturday, the UN envoy for Sudan, Volker Perthes, said he would facilitate talks between various Sudanese political forces aimed at reviving a fragile democratic transition. However, the Sudanese Communist Party has rejected the UN initiative, saying the military should be excluded from any political process in the country. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
From Sudan, we move to Somalia, where a terrorist group, Al-Shabaab, has claimed responsibility for a bombing Wednesday near the capital's international airport that killed at least 9 people. Mohamed Kahia spoke with authorities and witnesses in this report from Mogadishu.
Somalia's police force spokesman Abdulfatah Hassan Ali confirmed the casualties were a result of a suicide attacker who detonated a car bomb. He says before they used to target security agencies and government officials, but that is over today, and the target is Somali civilians. Mogadishu Deputy Mayor Ali Yare Ali said he survived the Wednesday attack and that the security agencies have launched an investigation. He says the security agencies will investigate the target of the attack and will share the outcome when we have finalized the inquiry. We ask the security agencies to beef up the security. He added that the enemy cannot intimidate us. Terrorist group Al-Shabaab claimed the responsibility for the attack, which it said targeted a convoy carrying foreigners. The claim could not be independently verified. Deadly blast comes just days after Somali leaders agreed to hold long-delayed elections in February after a dispute that widened a rift between the president and the prime minister. Analysts have been warning that Al-Shabaab will take advantage of the political tensions and any perceived power vacuum to launch attacks. The U.S. Embassy in Somalia condemned the Wednesday terrorist attack. Mohamed Kaye for VOA News in Mogadishu, Somalia.
The aid group International Rescue Committee says severe drought is affecting more than 3 million people in Somalia and southeast Ethiopia. The IRC says the two Horn of Africa nations are among 20 countries in the world most at risk for a worsening humanitarian crisis this year. Mohammed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
Ethiopia and Somalia are among 20 countries on the International Rescue Committee's emergency watch list for 2022. Richard Crothers is the IRC country director for Somalia. He says the humanitarian situation in the two countries is not good.
The Horn of Africa has been on the verge of crisis for some time. There have been several consecutive failed rainy seasons, and we've come to a situation right now where we're having a significant amount of food insecurity, human displacement.
The IRC says the lack of rainfall has led to the driest conditions in 40 years in parts of Somalia and Ethiopia. At least 3 million people have been affected by drought and more than 170,000 have fled their homes in search of water, pasture and humanitarian assistance. 47-year-old Noor Ahmed fled his hometown with his 60 cattle. He says he's transported his cattle from Birgod to Horai's town. In Horai's district, the local administration and the people welcomed us. I'm still here. He says there are some challenges. The cattle are finding it difficult to adapt to the area and we need some medicine. We use water from the borehole, but we don't have enough storage. He says if we can get a place to store the water, that could help us a lot. Crothers says women and children are the most affected by the drought.
Particularly the children under five are the most hit. It's destroying livelihoods, crops, herds of cattle that were once large have been diminished. So it's a rather desperate situation, I think, as usual. It's particularly the women and children that are getting hit the hardest.
Abdiaziz Bashir is a businessman based in the port city of Kismayo who deals with buying and selling of livestock. He lost 99 animals to the drought. He says, I had 118 livestock, only 19 survived. I lost the rest of the drought. I'm yet to recover from that loss, Bashir says. He adds the only good thing is that I no longer spend money on food to feed the remaining animals. They can get water and pasture for now. Aid agencies in Ethiopia and Somalia says food prices have gone up and some people cannot afford basic food to feed their families. The IRC says it has launched a response in Ethiopia's Somali region and says more money is needed to scale up humanitarian assistance in other areas. The aid agencies call for more funding to support cash assistance, food, water and sanitation facilities to combat health challenges. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu.
The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with the song Shauri Yako by Super Mazembe. Listening to Super Mazembe with the classic song Shauri Yako. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kama unipende weye, wende lote mama, kama.